You're listening to Mr. Open Banking, the only podcast dedicated to exploring the open banking movement. Whether you're a financial expert, banking executive, or everyday consumer, open banking affects everyone and will change the way we interact with our money. I'm A.L. Savan, your host. This episode is brought to you by Ozone API, unlocking the power of open finance all over the world. Does the United States have open banking? Well, that depends on your definition. If you mean regulated open banking, the kind that swept through Europe, Australia, and Brazil over recent years, then it only landed in the U.S. recently. On October 22, 2024, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, published the final version of their Personal Financial Data Rights Rule, commonly known as Section 1033. Its release marked the official arrival of regulated open banking in the United States. However, if you define open banking as the adoption of a common technical standard for the secure exchange of financial data, then the U.S. is considerably further along. The Financial Data Exchange, or FDX, is a private nonprofit founded in 2018 with the express purpose of bringing together players from across financial services to develop a common standard for data sharing. Open banking driven by market cooperation. No regulation required. These two forces, the regulator and the market, sometimes seem at odds. But the truth is that to make open banking work, you need both. The regulator sets the rules of the game, and the market players play the game. That dichotomy, that carefully balanced interplay, is currently working itself out in the United States in truly American fashion. Let's set the stage. While the CFPB has indeed released their final Section 1033 rule, regulating American open banking at last, they have not officially selected a technical standard. So, although the clock is ticking towards April 1st, 2026, the compliance date for the first set of banks, they actually don't know what it is they have to comply with. Back in June, the CFPB released their criteria for the selection of an industry standard-setting body, which will be responsible for addressing most of the technical requirements in the 1033 rule. Naturally, FDX applied and is widely considered the favorite. After all, the FDX standard is already used to share over 94 million customer records. But to date, the CFPB has not yet selected FDX as an official standards body. So the FDX API is not yet the official standard. The API, short for Application Programming Interface, is where the rubber hits the road. It's the technical glue that allows participants in the ecosystem to share consent-driven data in a common way. Every open banking regime has one, and figuring out how it works, now and in the future, is everything. Whether driven by the market or led by a regulator, building and maintaining a strong API is at the very core of what makes open banking tick, which puts FDX at the very core of what makes American open banking tick. For our extra-length season finale, we have brought on a guest uniquely positioned to tell us all about the special role FDX plays in building open banking, the American way. Kevin Feltes is the newly appointed Chief Executive Officer of the Financial Data Exchange, or FDX, a nonprofit organization dedicated to creating safer and smoother experiences for consumers and businesses who engage in open banking in the United States and beyond. FDX's mission is to unify the financial industry around a common, interoperable, and transparent standard for securely accessing user-permissioned financial data, a standard known as the FDX API. Before stepping into his role at FDX, Kevin spent nearly a decade at JP Morgan Chase, the largest bank in the world, where he served as head of partnerships and strategy for connected banking. In that role, he was instrumental in fostering collaboration between financial institutions and fintechs to enhance consumer experiences in an increasingly digital world. His leadership combines a strong understanding of market forces, regulatory landscapes, and technological innovation to advance open banking initiatives. Today, more than ever, Kevin's vision focuses on creating a more consumer-centric, secure, and adaptable financial ecosystem, while positioning FDX as a uniting force for the industry. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
You just stepped into the role of CEO at the Financial Data Exchange. You've previously described FDX as, quote, a group of people who came together with a common interest. Can you share more about that story? How did FDX come to be, and what are you inheriting as the new CEO?
The story starts back several years ago. FDX was founded in 2018 by a group of very diverse market participants who had different roles in the ecosystem, different competitive positions, but despite their differences, these companies felt there was tremendous opportunity and shared benefit from collaborating on technical standards for safer data sharing. Back then, there was all sorts of problems in the market. The majority of sharing happened via credential-based access methods, where there was not as much security, privacy, control, reliability, transparency as there could be. It was a scattered marketplace. There was a lack of really good relationships across parties, and the consumer experiences were unreliable, subpar. At a societal level, there was a huge opportunity for using financial data to make people's lives easier and better. But the share of people who were taking advantage of that and sharing their data wasn't as high as it could have been. We had millions of consumers even back then who were sharing their data with third parties, but we also had millions who were not sharing or not getting as much value out of that as they could. I remember my own personal experience back in 2015. I had a job and I wanted to use a budgeting app, but I was nervous about giving away my bank password. So I didn't do it. Then about a year later, I caved and I changed my mind and I gave my password and I set up the app, but the connection wasn't reliable and it broke all the time. And so I stopped using that budgeting app. And as a result, I had more anxiety about my money. I didn't really feel in control of my cash flows. I didn't know if I could afford to spend money on flying home for Easter or giving to charity or whatever it was. I wasted a lot of time in manual spreadsheets. And all of this is because at the time, there wasn't really a good system for safe data sharing. It was because open banking didn't really work well back then. Since then, the market has made amazing strides. There's been a huge migration off of credential-based access methods onto safer APIs. And when you think about how that happened from 2018 to today, a lot of it was hard work by individuals and firms, investments in APIs, bilateral agreements, et cetera. But a lot of it really was about the industry coming together at the Financial Data Exchange and using that as a better tool for coordination and collaboration. Not that there was no efforts prior to FDX for companies to collaborate on safe data sharing, but it was more scattered. And what FTX has done is really to give people a venue for coming together to create a very robust technical standard covering many different use cases so that when companies build data sharing interfaces to connect, they're doing it in an interoperable way. FTX also brought attention to the problem, gave a lot of companies a shared understanding and a taxonomy. It created a space for building of trust where people could both connect with experts and counterparties at other firms that they needed to work with, and created a framework and a process for talking about issues of shared interest. And I think that was done very effectively over the last several years with a culture within FTX of bringing together diverse parties to interact in a professional, respectful way, to work on hard problems. And as a result of that, they've made a lot of progress. We now have over 94 million consumer accounts being shared through APIs that are aligned to the FTX specification. And it's really notable that all of this happened organically through industry collaboration in the absence of specific regulatory mandates. And I think that's because many companies, even back then and still today, recognize that there are inherent benefits to them and their customers and to society from coming together to build these end-to-end experiences in interoperable ways.
The FTX standard is fully predicated on user-permissioned, or what is sometimes called consent-driven, access to data. It strives to ensure that users have as much control over their data as possible while staying safe. Can you share how FTX has historically protected data privacy while still providing control?
The standards that FTX has aligned on over the last several years are around defining a common API-based method for sharing. APIs in their nature allow a consumer to authenticate directly with their bank, so not to have to give their financial institution username and password to a third party. So that in itself is a tremendous security benefit. To exchange tokens to allow for specific packets of data that the consumer has authorized to be transmitted from the account holding institution to the third party. Many of the details have been worked out over the last several years. In FTX, the technical working groups are around how do we maximize security while minimizing the data that is transmitted to only that which the consumer has permissioned. So there's a lot of details that need to come together to make that happen around how you define data scopes and how you define models for data recipients and data access platforms and data providers to coordinate that authorization and the data transmission. The net result is a far better experience for the consumer, where they have the opportunity to grant access to specific data that meets the use case and to have control over that data in an ongoing way, either through a dashboard on the third party or on the data provider side. And that's a great customer experience. When I was at Chase, we got a ton of positive feedback that consumers really valued not having to give away their credentials and having that ongoing control over who they were sharing their data with and what data was shared.
You mentioned Chase, so let's go there for a minute. JPMorgan Chase is, needless to say, an organization with immense scale and resources. I would imagine transitioning to a nonprofit like FTX must have brought unique adjustments, particularly in how limited resources are managed. What tools or strategies have you identified in FTX's tool belt that have helped it effectively drive change?
That's a great question. It's no doubt FTX is a small business, but punching way above its weight class. It's a relatively modest budget and staff, but driving huge positive industry outcomes. In terms of how it does that, I would point to three factors. The first is tremendous contributions from our member firms. We have about 200 member firms today and so many hardworking people throughout the organization that are putting in extra hours. I could just go down a list of so many names in the working groups and the task forces who have put in time, sometimes on nights and weekends, people who think this is an opportunity to not only help my firm get better and navigate the open banking landscape, but also to shape the future of financial services and build frameworks that can help the entire industry. These member contributions really do come from all different types. It's a very diverse ecosystem. There's a lot of technologists, but also people who are experts in privacy or risk management or legal or regulatory matters. And if you're a person who's trying to figure out your open banking strategy, you quickly realize that it is a multifunctional problem to be solved. And you either need to work across your own firm or you benefit from coming to a place like FDX and interacting with experts from each of those different functions. We've also just had great member contributions in terms of technologists who have expertise in particular areas. When I joined FDX, it was very helpful for me to listen to them. And I'm not an expert by any means in blockchain or digital identity or GraphQL or verifiable credentials, but we have great technologists who are experts in those areas who are very willing to share their expertise. Those are some of the member contributions that have really helped FDX punch above its weight class. That's been a huge factor. The second one I would mention in terms of how FDX has been able to be successful with relatively modest resources is borrowing lessons from other countries and also other standards bodies, which the staff has really leaned into. And I think that's been very wise. If you're an open banking super nerd like me or like Mr. Open Banking, you may have studied open banking trends and frameworks in other parts of the world, but a lot of busy people may not realize that other countries, there are very robust open banking ecosystems in place where a lot of the same questions that we're grappling with in North America have also come up around consent flows and data minimization, token security, certification, registry, third-party app registration, all of the same technical issues. One of the greatest things I enjoyed about FDX's annual summits in years past is we have speakers who have built open banking integrations in other countries who have lots of great learnings. They may be 3 years ahead of us or 5 years post-regulation in other countries. We have really benefited from having those companies as part of FDX to bring in their learnings. Don Cardinal and the staff have been very smart about borrowing from those other countries, those other frameworks where it makes sense so that we're not starting from scratch. The same goes for other standards bodies. We have tried to pick up best practices in terms of governance, frameworks, processes from other standards bodies in financial services or other industries. And that's definitely an aspiration that I have for FDX going forward is to continue to bring in best practices from other countries and other standards bodies so that we can operate super efficiently. Thirdly, a lot of great work by the FDX staff. I'm still just a few weeks into the role here, but I'm already so appreciative of what the staff has done this past several years. At the end of the day, I think a lot of people see that there are huge macro benefits of moving over time toward a safer data sharing ecosystem. But day to day, it's a lot of hard work to make that happen, one person at a time, to bring people together and to run meetings and to brainstorm solutions that can be win for different parties, build trust, facilitate dialogue. And I think the staff has done a great job, and we're hoping to continue doing that better and better over time.
You mentioned working groups and task forces. Can you give us a bit of a flyby of FDX's structure and how that structure helps drive collaboration, and perhaps how it's evolved over time?
I'll start by saying that FDX has always had an approach toward trying to welcome diverse voices and to have a balance. So we have the work around standard setting that occurs in working groups, and then working groups have breakout task forces to author changes or new additions to our technical standards through a request for change process. Throughout that process, we're very deliberate about having working groups co-chaired by different types of entities, whether it's bank or non-bank, data provider or third party, and then trying to always operate by consensus, where we want to make sure that the solutions incorporate the feedback of the different types of market participants. And then once a proposed change has contemplated, authored, and had all the feedback folded in, it will graduate up to our board where we will approve and adopt it into a spec. There's a lot of evolution that's happened over time. Part of it is expanding the scope to support additional data elements, account types, and use cases. Part of it is to account for evolution in technology and best practices. That's one of the benefits of having an industry-driven body with a lot of diverse participants, is that as the shape of the market structure evolves, as technology evolves, as regulations evolve, we can continue to be adaptive and continue to refine those technology best practices and standards as we go along.
Seven years ago, FDX was born. Out of a need to help players in the U.S. financial services ecosystem collaborate on standards. Specifically, on standards that enable the secure exchange of user-permissioned data. The secure part was key. American consumers have been sharing their banking data since the 90s, but in very insecure ways, often using a method known as screen scraping, which demanded they share their bank passwords. Nevertheless, they did so, by the millions. Consumers wanted the benefits that came from data sharing, so the industry needed a proper way to provide those benefits. Enter APIs. The first crop were proprietary, with market players building closed networks based on bilateral agreements. But soon, it became obvious that an interoperable standard would save everyone a lot of time, money, and headaches. And along came FDX. Since its first version, the FDX API has enjoyed unique success relative to its global peers. By 2020, it was being used to share 12 million records. By 2022, it was 42 million, and now, in 2024, it has topped 94 million, more than any open banking standard in the world. Kevin says the success is down to three main factors: massive member contributions, learnings from others, and an outstanding staff, all enabled by a democratic, transparent process that ensures everyone is heard. But where does FDX stand when it comes to the dichotomy between regulation and market? That's where Kevin and I go next. Around the world, open banking initiatives are sometimes divided into regulatory-led versus market-driven. FDX, the leading standard in the United States, is often held up as the archetype for a market-driven approach. Is this a fair characterization?
There's no doubt that in the United States, there has been a tremendous amount of market progress in setting up safer data sharing methods. And there's been a lot of consumer adoption of open banking connections in the absence of an explicit regulatory mandate. No question. At the same time, I think that the regulation in the US and Canada is going to make a big difference in shaping the marketplace. This is where I think that market participants and FDX, we need to keep an eye on both of those trends, both of those factors, and we need to be flexible. At FDX, we are a member-driven organization. We listen to our members. We talk to our regulators. We need to factor in both of those inputs into our path forward and the value that we provide to the marketplace. I think with regard to the underlying market forces that are in place in the United States, it's important to anchor ourselves in some of these core trends that I do not see changing under any regulatory environment. Over the next 5 years, the consumer demand for safe permission data sharing is only going to keep growing. We see more and more digital tools arising built on the backbone of permission data sharing, more and more use cases. You see the growth of consumer adoption in the numbers. And you can also feel it at a human level. To give you a personal example, I have not gone out of my way to intentionally share my data with as many companies as possible. In the course of living my life over the last couple of years, I've shared my data with multiple companies as part of applying for a mortgage and funding a new financial account, setting up payroll, linking a digital wallet, making a payment, linking a budgeting app. Like many consumers, I care about that experience. Does it work well? Is it easy? Is it reliable? Is it safe? And there's just going to be more and more consumers engaging those experiences. They are experiences that matter to people's lives. When I bought my first house, it was during the pandemic. And at one point in the process, my wife and I, we wanted to make an offer on a house, and I had to get a mortgage pre-approval super quickly, like in a day, not 2 weeks. Luckily, I was able to use an open banking connection to verify my income and assets with the lender, instantly get the mortgage and keep going in the process. That made a real difference in my life. Even though it was a small thing in terms of the technology connection and that moment, it had a big impact. Another example I'll give, I just recently joined a new company, and a few days after I joined the company was payday. And I had to set up my payroll account before I could get paid, which meant I had to link my bank account. And this could have gone two ways. I could have done this instantly through an open banking connection, verify my destination bank account and get paid on the 15th. Or B, I could link my account through micro deposits, which might take a few days. And now I might not get that first paycheck until maybe later on or the 30th of the month. In my case, I'm fortunate that I can afford if my first paycheck is delayed a couple weeks, but many people aren't in that position. All that's to say, getting open banking to work properly really does touch people's lives, sometimes in small ways, sometimes in very big ways. And more of these connections are being made over time. More and more consumers are going to be doing this. And there's no doubt that the need to address unreliable or unsafe connections, that need continues to grow. The second macro factor is going to continue to drive the market independent of any regulatory factors is the need for collaboration at places like FDX. There are so many companies in the United States because we have such a diverse and large financial services ecosystem with so many fintech apps that are using consumer permission data and so many banks and so many credit unions that are growing up around data sharing. It's a very complex ecosystem. The need is going to remain tremendously strong for each company to figure out how to interact with counterparties and other companies. And so the demand for interoperable standardized methods will remain tremendously strong. the need for venues to collaborate and talk about use cases and methods and end-to-end journeys is going to remain strong regardless of any regulatory pressures. The benefits of having relationships and a strong community of diverse stakeholders to come together and collaborate in the US is going to remain strong as well. Those are two very important market trends that will shape things as we watch the regulatory environment evolve.
In many ways, FDX works at the intersection of market forces and government regulation. What does it mean to you to function as this intersection? If you're the middleman of sorts, what do your priorities become?
At FDX, we are a member-driven organization, and we need to help our members in this open banking journey. So it is a pressing reality for each of our members. To the extent that there are regulatory requirements, we need to help them live in accordance with those regulations and to make sure that our standards are appropriately adapted to any regulatory realities. We also see in the 1033 final regulation, for example, the CFPB taking an approach where it has looked to the market pretty heavily to try to work together and sort out common methods and common approaches. And so we're actively thinking about where do we think we can establish common ground in a way that is mutually beneficial for each of our members. FDX is definitely not intending to solve everything. We've made a tremendous amount of progress over the last several years, but I think we have a lot of opportunity as the preeminent primary convening body for a critical mass of fintechs and banks and aggregators and consumer groups in the United States to talk about some of these larger issues. I think companies see a lot of benefit coming together at FDX, not necessarily because they agree on their regulatory interpretations or agree on what regulation should be. We have ample evidence that a lot of diverse members of the open banking ecosystem in the United States have different views on how the regulatory requirements around consumer permission data sharing should shape up. We have a long history of people having healthy tension and different ideas about these things. And so FDX is not trying to referee all of that, but I think we can work closely with regulators to understand what they're trying to solve and to do that in a way where we're creating a safe space for respectful dialogue and really anchoring all of that in a recognition that collaborating together as an industry and taking an industry-driven approach to standards and common methods is far better than the alternative of fracturing and taking many different bespoke approaches, which is really going to cause more headache, cost, harm for individual companies, for consumers, and for the financial ecosystem at large.
You mentioned 1033, the recently published rulemaking from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that enshrines regulated open banking in the United States. FDX has applied to become a recognized standards body to address 1033. What changes has FDX made to accommodate the criteria set forth by the CFPB?
At FDX, we've had a lot of conversation over the last year or two getting ready for the prospects of this final 1033 regulation. One of the work streams has been around making sure that the governance attributes of FTX are as strong as they can be. There was various requirements that the CFPB put forth for the governance attributes that would be required for a recognized standards body. We've always had a framework that is anchored in balance and diversity. A membership today that is already about 200 members of financial institutions, aggregators, fintechs, consumer groups, but we've given a very close look over the last several months around our governance to make sure that in terms of balance and diversity and openness, we're doing as good of a job as we can to give comfort to the market. The way that we operate and the standards that we create are going to be inclusive and fair. We've already had balance in our working groups and our task forces and our processes, but we're very proud of the changes that we've undertaken recently. When you look at the volume of changes to our technical spec that have been authored in the past, we already have a lot of diversity there in terms of data providers, third parties, large companies, small companies, but we want to continue to make our organization function in such a way that it's very welcoming to all types of organizations so that they can have a seat at the table and have a voice so that if those standards do become recognized standards under 1033, that the regulators and the market has confidence in how they came to be.
There exists something of an understanding that the market-driven approach is biased towards commercial interest, while the regulatory-led approach will prioritize consumer protection. Are you aligned with this take, or do you see these forces behaving in unanticipated ways?
I think that the progress that we've made at FTX and the industry over the last several years has definitely been anchored in trying to do what's right for the consumer. From my experience in FTX working groups and task forces and at the board, that has always been a guiding light. I won't opine on the optimal regulatory framework for open banking in the US or any country to drive competition. But one thing I will say, in a framework like we have in the US, where you have organizations like FTX that are seeking to set standards and define best practices and norms, you definitely have to lean in and speak up. And at FTX, we really want that for all companies to be leaning in, collaborating, and speaking up. Whether they're a consumer advocate and they have certain outcomes in mind that they're trying to drive, or they're a bank or a data aggregator and they want to make sure that certain priorities around security or privacy or data minimization or efficiency make their way into the technical standards and the norms of the marketplace. When you're in a market-driven environment, you have to show up and speak up, and we definitely want that to happen at FTX. One of the benefits of a market-driven approach or a regulatory framework where the government is looking to industry to define norms or best practices is that if you're an expert or you're passionate about this, you can lean in at places like FTX and really have an opportunity to make an impact at scale. That's very energizing. It's not just about looking to the government to give us instructions about how this is all going to work. It gives an opportunity for passionate experts to lean in and make a meaningful incremental impact at scale on businesses and consumers in the shape of the financial services industry. We talk about within FTX how there are well north of 100 million consumers who are sharing data with third parties in North America today. And that is just a mind-boggling number. I like to make an example in my own mind about how if you had a single file line of 100 million people, it would stretch around the world two times. It's just an amazing scale of impact for the few hundred people that are coming together to collaborate on standards and methods and norms for safer data sharing. It's a very special opportunity to make the lives of over 100 million people work a little bit better. Likewise, in terms of business impact, businesses are going to be spending huge sums of money over the coming years in building APIs, adapting APIs, running APIs, figuring out how to safely manage data sharing integrations with thousands of counterparties. If the market, through places like FTX, can come together to define common methods, sensible standards, then that money will be spent to buy us a safer, more efficient, well-functioning data sharing ecosystem. And if we fail to do that effectively as a market, we're going to still end up spending a lot of money to enable safe, or maybe not as safe, data sharing. It is going to work less well for banks, for aggregators, for consumers. It's also going to be a more frustrating outcome for policymakers in terms of the societal benefits that they're trying to drive.
While FTX is often painted as an exclusively market-driven animal, this isn't entirely accurate. To be sure, it is private, and it is driven by its membership, who are market players. But when regulation finally did come, FTX found itself more in the middle of the dichotomy, rather than on just one side. For years, FTX and the CFPB have been in a kind of dance. As FTX continued to grow organically, the CFPB watched this growth with keen interest, issuing notices, warnings, and drafts that eventually led to an official rule, Section 1033. Since then, far from fighting the rulemaking, FTX has been busily adjusting its governance practices and procedures so that they may be selected as an official standards-setting body, acting as a bridge between the market and the regulator. Yet, whether there exists a regulatory regime or not, FTX would continue to grow. As Kevin says, the need for an interoperable standard and the need for collaboration among stakeholders are two forces that are not going away. So, while FTX is certainly committed to helping its members prepare for any regulatory realities, its fundamental commitment is to its guiding light: doing what's right for the consumer, a job they will continue to do well into the future, no matter where it leads. We are currently looking at a couple of possible futures for open banking in the US that are contingent on forces currently at play, regulatory and market alike. What are the forces that you're keeping your eye on, and what are some of the potential futures that you see for US open banking?
I do think where regulations go in the United States and in Canada are going to make a significant difference in terms of a lot of the details. If you read the final 1033 regulation around how authorization works and what data must be shared, it could have a substantial impact on a lot of the details. I don't think that the underlying secular forces around needing to build programs to support safe data sharing, those are not changing, but I think a lot of the details will get wrapped up in the specifics of the regulation and whether those stay or get overturned or delayed, whether we have recognition of standards bodies, which bodies. I think it's going to matter a lot for the details. We're trying to focus at FTX on how can we plan ahead for how these things change. One of the things I've noticed in observing Europe and Mexico is that it's not always reasonable to expect that you're going to land on a given regulatory framework and that is going to be the resting point. There's always dynamism and change. There's new politicians that come in and leave, and there are amendments to frameworks. And we will need to be adaptive for years to come under any scenario to what the regulatory landscape looks like. So we will need to be flexible to changing regulatory requirements under any scenario.
As open banking develops, for some, there remains a question mark around how it may impact multiple departments of their organization, including IT, legal, business strategy, and others. Wearing your banker hat, can you share your thoughts on what some of these cross-departmental impacts could be, and any corresponding advice for leaders wanting to prepare?
I would definitely agree that this is a multifunctional question for banks. How am I going to safely protect my customers as they look to share data on the accounts that I provide to them to third parties? And also, on the flip side, how do I build a smart strategy for building tools that leverage held away data for faster payments, better lending, better money management, cash flow for small businesses, accounting tools? So I think bringing together different parts of the organization to talk about that holistically and collectively is a wise approach. There are just so many different aspects to an open banking strategy of product managers and regulatory affairs, policy and advocacy people, legal compliance, technology architecture. We're at a time where, because there are so many customers of the banks that are sharing the data, there's probably a lot of feelings in the industry about that. There might be excitement, hopefulness, stress, feeling overwhelmed or confused or frustrated. Having an open dialogue and having a framework for bringing together different functions to talk about some of those conflicting pressures is going to be an imperative for any bank. And there's a lot of dimensions to this, as we've seen in the industry. Regulatory bodies and consumer groups have certain motivations around open banking outcomes, whether it's regarding competition, payments, account switching, fueling new innovation in money management. There's a strong intersection of open banking with the evolution of artificial intelligence and chatbots. I think that AI is top of mind for many institutions right now, and the intersection of safe data sharing with unpacking value from that data using artificial intelligence is probably a key touchstone and conversation point for many institutions. And there's many also that are just still very focused on ending the practice of screen scraping and getting their arms around what data is being shared and making sure that privacy practices and data minimization are top of mind. So all of that has existed for a while. We're layering on, of course, the compliance dimension with forthcoming regulations. One of the things we're trying to do at the Financial Data Exchange is to create an environment that all of those different functions, whether you're legal, regulatory compliance, product, engineering, technology, that we have working groups, that we have places to share ideas and incorporate those diverse perspectives into our standard setting and our creation of common methods.
Let's spend our closing chapter talking about the benefits of FDX and how it helps address some of those challenges. Given the wide range of organizations, teams, and roles that FDX collaborates with, how does it balance the interests of different types of stakeholders?
That's been one of the great strengths of FDX since its founding, is the ability to bring together banks and fintechs and data access platforms and consumer groups and diverse types of organizations who don't always share the same commercial interests, and finding opportunities and being creative and brainstorming. Where are there places where we can align? What makes sense for the consumer? And how do these shared interoperable standards and methods make it more efficient for everybody? And there will be times where there's healthy tension, and that's a good thing. And that's been the case since FDX's founding. If you're an individual or a company that's trying to enable safe data sharing for their customers, you need to think about your collaboration strategy. There's no way in the open banking space for companies to operate in a vacuum. The nature of what we do is to build interfaces and experiences where consumers can share their data from one company to another company. There's no way around that. You have to work with many, many other companies. So the patterns of collaboration are going to be critical. And that's probably especially true in the United States, even more so than in many other jurisdictions, because we have such a massive ecosystem of banks and credit unions and a very robust fintech ecosystem. So a lot of companies are in a pretty tricky spot right now in terms of figuring out how they're going to manage those different use cases and all of those counterparties who don't always have 100% agreement on things. At FDX, on all issues, it is a very effective collaboration strategy to use it as a forum where we have a critical mass of the key parties to come together and to work on standards and collaborate on things where there's mutual benefit. We're very, very bullish on that element, because I don't think that the need to figure out how to collaborate with counterparties is going away.
Being part of FDX gives members a seat at the table in shaping industry standards. What does being a member-led organization mean to you and to the team at FTX.
There's no question the members are the heart of FTX. They bring so much heart. It's really inspiring when you're inside the walls, in the board meetings, in the task force, in the working groups. These are people that are so expert in their fields, and they bring so much passion to this shared project of trying to make data sharing work better for all. And you have lots of different personas inside that. Technologists who are really passionate about an ecosystem framework that is efficient and safe. You've got people who are very savvy about the commercial aspects of data sharing, and people who have great expertise in the user experience flows and the way that consumers are thinking about this, and people who are expert in regulation, expert in risk management. It's really the diversity of the community that comes together and solves different aspects of this problem that make it great. And you see that in the output of the work. The spec itself has many different dimensions across security and data elements and user experience, and that reflects just the diversity of contributions and expertise from across the members.
For organizations considering joining, what would you say to close the deal?
I think every organization is in a different spot. They have different interests in this ecosystem, different reasons for being part of the community. And so it'll be different for everyone. I can say for me personally, in my past as a member and a participant in FTX, it's made me immensely smarter to be a member and participate in the working groups, to come to the summits. It's helped me to understand the ecosystem, use cases and participants in a way that's really helped me to better define my firm strategy. It's provided social capital. It's really able to help firms with knowing how to comply, how to use FTX standards to reduce costs of integrations, making better decisions for some firms around do they want to build or buy or partner. And it's created a lot of great connections across the industry. There's so many professionals right now that are trying to guide their firms through this complex, fun puzzle that is open banking, and to know people and know who to call to find solutions and figure out the best path forward is tremendously valuable. I think it would be different for each individual, each company, but we really have a great community together today. We're welcoming of all and encourage you to please reach out.
If our listeners are interested in learning more about the work you're doing at FTX or about how to become a member, where can they go?
You can reach us at our website, which is financialdataexchange.org, and we've got information there about how to contact us.
Kevin, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. This was great. I appreciate it.
Let's be clear. Open banking has already succeeded in the United States. The CFPB themselves estimate that as of 2022, at least 100 million consumers had authorized a third party to access their account data. The number of individual instances or API calls in which consumer financial accounts were accessed is estimated to exceed 50 billion and may have been as high as 100 billion, figures that vastly surpass those from other regions. These figures will only grow. Likewise, FTX has already succeeded. It now includes over 200 members who run the gamut from staunch market players like banks and fintechs to advocacy bodies like legal teams and consumer agencies. It acts as a steward for an API standard that is used to share over 94 million records, lovingly maintained by its members in a manner that is democratic, transparent, and evenly balanced. Despite the thrilling arrival of Section 1033, the future of regulated open banking in the United States remains uncertain. A day after the rule dropped, the Banking Policy Institute and Kentucky Bankers Association issued a lawsuit challenging the CFPB's authority. Many banks named in the lawsuit are also members of FDX. A new administration is coming to the White House as well, one that has not expressed much love for regulations. This volatility leaves many questions unanswered. But one thing is for certain: the success of American open banking will continue, regardless of where the regulatory chips may land. Regular listeners may remember that the managing director of FDX, Don Cardinal, was a guest on this show, all the way back in season one. In fact, he was our third guest ever. At the time, many were skeptical that the challenge of open banking could be met by the market alone. Don, the team at FDX, and now Kevin, spend all day, every day, proving the skeptics wrong. That doesn't mean they are against regulation or for it. It simply means that, with the guidance of their members, FDX will stay agile, nimble, forever ready to adjust to whatever future American open banking may bring. With that, our fifth season comes to a close. To our regular listeners, thank you for continuing to give us your valuable time. To those just discovering the show, check out our backlog, and we hope you come back next season for more Mr. Open Banking. Thanks for listening to Mr. Open Banking, the podcast that explores the ongoing evolution of open banking and its impact on our lives. Make no mistake, the rise of open banking is going to change financial services forever, and we will be covering that story every step of the way. This is your host, A.L. Savan. Until next time. This episode of Mr. Open Banking was made possible by Ozone API, providers of the only API platform that supports every open banking standard in the world, unlocking the power of open finance. To learn more, visit ozoneapi.com.